So what we're doing is, introductions and reintroductions. We'll go through the announcements. A quick check-in on current action items and work items. And the focus of the meeting will be any feedback from the open pull request related to DID hardening feedback. And lastly, we'll talk about the findings from the DID hackathon and sort of go through some specific notes and questions we had for BTCR related to the resolver, the format of the DID document, et cetera. Okay, let's see. Who would like, do I have any volunteers for introductions or reintroductions? I'm not familiar with Akila. Would you mind introducing yourself, Akila?
Sure. I'm Akila. I'm from Consensus. We are working on a platform. We are working with UPOC to build our platform to issue credentials. So we've been attending these calls for the last, I think, couple of months. Usually there are a couple more from my team who joined this call as well. So the three of us have been in this call for the last couple of months.
Excellent. Thank you for joining. Okay, so I will stick. I don't see any candidates for reintroductions, and we have a full agenda. So I'm going to move on to announcements. So as we mentioned earlier when we were going through the work breakdown structure documents that Joe presented, I think it was last week, we want to try to give a bit more structure to the meetings, not just in terms of, you know, being more specific about the work items, but having some predictability when certain topics will happen. That will help avoid problems where we get the crypto experts and we're not talking about anything related to that. We'll be following up with more details on that. But for now, I have some announcements about upcoming focuses for the next roughly month. Next week, we're going to have the Educational Task Force present our new work items. So I briefly talked about this in a past meeting. But we've been breaking down some details a bit in a new GitHub repo. So we'd like to present our goals to the group, get feedback. And we have Nate Otto and Terry Lemoy who have been joining us for the last, well, they've been part of the community for a while, but they've been joining us more heavily the last month or so. So they'll be joining us. They're obviously, very big in the Open Badges community, and we'll all be reaching out to related educational folks who are interested in this effort. So I'm very excited we'll have a chance to present it to the group. February 6th, we'll have the first of our Crypto Tuesdays. In general, the plan is to have that the first Tuesday of the month. This next meeting on February 6th will review data minimization and selective disclosure. Oh, yeah, and then prioritize the review of the digital verification suites, which are like all the LD signature suites and, you know, specific suites from that, like RSA signature suite 2017. And February 13th, we will review linked data capabilities. Some related events, let's see, implementer stand-up post-DID reconciliation draft. So this is essentially after the DID reconciliation is sort of quiescing, we'll have a stand-up for implementers to check in. That's going to be February 19th. Next rebooting Web of Trust is March 6th through 9th in Santa Barbara. And we do have an Eventbrite for that now. Let me share that real fast.
And please sign up soon, especially if you're going to the disc golf tournament on Monday, because that may affect how many flying discs we order.
Excellent. And then the next IIW will be April 3rd through 5th. Here's the Eventbrite for that. Oh, oops, I missed stuff. 1 second. Strike that. IIW is this link. And, oh, yes. And then at IIW, the April 5th through 6th, we'll have a post-IIW verifiable claim face-to-face. I'm not sure about the details on that. If anyone is familiar, wants to point out anything, speak up. Otherwise, we'll move on to the current action items progress.
This is Monty just speaking up. Basically, book your flight for an additional day if you want to be at the face-to-face meeting. But one of the requirements of being at the face-to-face meeting is that you either clear it with the chairs that you're going to attend if you're not a W3C member, or you have to be a W3C member. So just book your flight to tack it on so that you're leaving Friday at some point. But we don't have the exact times nailed down yet.
Okay, thank you.
Maynard, when you say leaving Friday, does that mean that the meeting will bleed over to be on Friday, or?
Yes, maybe. Probably. Don't know yet.
Okay. I typically leave Friday evening anyway, so. All right, sounds good.
Okay, so for progress on current action items, I don't think we had anything to poll specifically about. We just want to see, does anyone have an action item that they want to report status on? If so, speak up, please. Or add yourself to the queue, rather. Manu.
Hey, sorry. Yeah, I'm having a hard time seeing. So the registries are done and out there. The DID spec is in a fairly good state right now. I think we're going to talk about DID spec in a little bit. But just wanted to note that Marcus has an outstanding PR there that we need to resolve before we pull that in. But I think the current action item is like get the DID hardening spec changes, harmonization stuff in there. It's in there. Please, people, take a look at it because we're probably gonna pull it into the main spec pretty soon. So if you haven't had a chance, please look at it.
So I'm going to paste something in, action item 5A, this is how it's mentioned in the minutes. So this one you're referring to, can I update that to something like, the draft is in, we just need everyone to give feedback at this point.
Yeah, fundamentally,
okay.
We should probably set a date when we're pulling that in, because there's been a decent bit of discussion and
okay.
Even some implementation against it.
Yes. Let's see. What is a reasonable date for this one? Do we have any other? Let's see.
I'd prefer a week just because it's been out there for a while.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, we did say end of January, and it's getting to end of January, so.
Perfect. I'm going to say we need feedback on the DID hardening PR by next week, which is the 30th.
And can we get the PR in the IRC?
Yes. And we're actually going to talk about that today. Let's see. Okay. here is the PR. And Marcus is on the queue.
I just wanted to explain what my PR is about. I don't know if this is a good time now or later.
Can we cover it when we get to the DID Manu's part? I'll add a note to make sure to call you out.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks. Okay, I think pretty much everything else we are talking about soon. And Manu, I'll follow up with you. I think that you mentioned the registry items are submitted, and I think we can remove those from the action item list as well. I don't think there's anything pending.
Agreed.
Does that sound okay? Okay, so I'll take an action to clean up registries. Action items.
Well, there is in the current action items, there was the spec text of the registries process needed. We needed to move that from the list to the GitHub.
Agreed. Can we make that just a separate action item?
It is currently. It's G.
Okay. Yep. That still needs to be done.
Okay. Oops. I just can't type registry right now. Okay. So let's move on to the status of the current work items. We're going to pick three. Just give a quick high level, anything that you want to call out. We'll start with the CCG process. That, I guess, I should probably be familiar
with
what we're
talking
about there.
So I put these first two here. I put these first two here as there wasn't really an owner. I mean, the registry process, I guess the owner is Manu as a work item. But, like, we don't have an owner, you know, lead editor for the just overall CCG process.
This is Joe. I'll step into that. If we want to put my name on it.
Okay.
Joe, you want to put your name on CCG?
Chairs, I'm in our next week's thing so I can keep track of action items and stuff. So I'm editing that document. Mm-hmm.
Great. Good idea.
Okay, so I think I heard Joe said we can assign him owner of CCG process?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So for registry, I'll make a note that will make Manu cry if we force that to happen. Manu, do you want to comment on that?
No. I'm fine. Sorry, it was just background crying.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if there were other candidate owners or, you know. So yeah, that sounds good. We will describing about Manu's tears. Yeah, we'll have you as owner of that. Okay. And then lastly, we wanted to check in on verifiable claims, browser API, and polyfill. Is Dave Longley on the line?
Yeah. We still need to schedule some time to talk with Google's team. We just haven't had time to do it. Other than that, we haven't had any major progress there. We also haven't had anybody providing any feedback on what they'd like to see in the query mechanism or anything on the issues. So if anybody's interested in doing that, please provide feedback at the repo. I'll drop a link in IRC.
Thanks, Dave. Okay, let's go on to the DID hardening PR. So we'll start with Manu, if you want to drive us through, you know, the current status, any questions that anyone has, and then we will go on to Marcus's changes. So reminder, here is the pardoning PR.
Awesome, thank you. So I think the updating the DID spec wasn't too difficult. It reflects what I believe is where we got on just about everything in the spec. There are some sections that I needed to comment out, like delegation, because we don't have, we don't have that figured out, and and things like authorization, we've said are going to go into method specific specs. So the spec and examples should reflect where things are post the DID hardening discussions. Please take a look at the spec if you haven't already to make sure that you're okay with all of the changes. There is a preview and a diffmark version. I'll get those. So the preview link is here. Diffmark version is here. Okay, so the diffmark version is there. Hopefully it's nothing controversial, because in theory it should reflect what everybody agreed to. But if there are changes, please let us know. Marcus has come in with a really useful PR that updates some of the examples and other matter in the spec. I think I'll let him cover it. But other than those two things, if we get those pulled in, we'll be in a good place to then start nailing down more things in the specification. The other thing to note is that people are starting to implement against the spec now. We are certainly implementing against the spec, or what we believe is in the spec, and I'm expecting other folks are as well.
Thank you. Marcus, do you want to talk to your proposed changes?
Yeah, like Manu said, it's basically a few updates to the examples. Some of the examples didn't have the service property as an array, and instead they had individual properties for different services, like there was a credential repository service or messaging service or example service, and so I updated all the examples to have just the service array. That's one of the changes. Then I fixed a lot of very simple JSON bugs, which I think were not controversial. And I was wondering about what examples for service endpoints to include. So we had things like credential repository service or messaging service or OpenID service, and in the hardening and harmonization discussions, we were using all kinds of examples for service endpoints. So what I did was to just have an example service without saying what it is in most of the examples. And then in the section that explains service endpoints, that's where I added a lot of different examples, basically everything that I could find for every potential service endpoint type that I found in the various documents that we had, including things like a social web inbox service or OpenID service or DAD auth service. So I restructured that a little bit to have these concrete examples only in section 4.4, I think. And in that section, I also changed the language a little bit, just to describe how service endpoints work. That's the only thing that we should look at. I think all the other changes should not be controversial, I think. I was wondering a little bit about service types, in linked data and RDF notion and JSON-LD in the format we typically use uppercase resource names, right? RDF resource names. So we have things like uppercase messaging and then uppercase service. Whereas in some of the Google Docs that we've been discussing in the last few weeks, we were using lowercase syntax. So that's what I noticed where the current spec is not consistent with the talks we were discussing recently.
Okay, so I see no one on the queue. Well, I guess I'll add some quick comments from the CID hackathon from last week. We were using it, and you know, from what we saw, the updates looked great. The only, you know, feedback that we had, which we're not proposing to block on because we can do this, is suggesting adding some more samples. So that's something that I can take a stab at as we sort of get feedback on our BTCR samples as well. Besides that, it looked great. And we had Christopher Allen on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to appreciate the work that Marcus was putting in to try to, you know, normalize some names and stuff, and, you know, do some cleanup on the examples. I in particular ran into, you know, when I was looking through all of your different endpoint types and things of that nature, ran into something sort of related to that, which we're going to talk about in the BTCR, which in effect the BTCR method has specifies a particular kind of endpoint. And I was just sort of wanting to kind of pop up and are there other, DID methods that are also going to be specifying a specific endpoint or something? So I was just trying to, you know, get a feeling if from like, is there is one, you know, have something that is very, very specific to, and only to Veris One as an endpoint that it uses, does Newport, et cetera.
We have Drummond on the queue. Drummond?
To answer Christopher's question, I can only speak for the sovereign method. I don't know if it will be required, but there will certainly be a standard type of endpoint, a sovereign agent endpoint, associated with most DIDs that use the sovereign method. I think as we complete the sovereign methods, DID method spec, it could turn out to go, oh, actually it is going to be necessary to interact control authorization that the endpoint is required. I haven't seen that yet, but it doesn't surprise me. I'll put it that way. But that comment only applies to the sovereign method and not to any of the others.
So we might have we'll probably have an optional kind of backup hub type endpoint where we'll store some metadata attached to the identity, but it's still kind of being worked out. So nothing is set in stone.
Thanks, Christian. Next, we have Nanu on the queue.
Veris One doesn't have any specific endpoints right now. We were trying to point to other specs and make anything else, like a service that's method specific, kind of put that in the method spec. Nothing Veris One specific.
Marcus?
Well, to be honest, I'm a bit surprised to hear that some DID methods would support or require certain service endpoints that others don't. It doesn't seem to encourage interoperability. I'm just curious, what is that special endpoint that you have in BTCR?
Yeah, well, so I'll explain it. This is exactly, Marcus, your concern is exactly, you know, one of my kind of feeling weird about it, the endpoint.
So in BTCR, we have only one, we have only one 40 byte, in some cases 80 byte field to be able to refer to the DID document. So we're in effect, you know, saying that there is a, here is the place to begin to get to construct the DID document. In the case of a standard URL, it may have some other, you know, stuff in that static object, or in the case of an ITFS URL, that might only be the first of a number of things that has to be grabbed. But it happens to also be a convenient place where we can also put in some issuer-based verifiable claims in a static place as well. So, you know, we're, you know, I was kind of confused as far as how, since it had a very specific BTCR specific function, but it could also store verifiable claims that other people might want to grab. You know, did we want to specify this in a more generic form, which is here is an endpoint that has a static bag at the end of it, and if it's got a DID, well, we're using it in BTCR, but if it has other things like verifiable claims, you can use it, or whether or not we have two endpoints, I don't know. It just felt weird. So we'll talk a little bit more about it in the next section. Just wanted to get a feel for, you know, what other people were doing. Done.
Adrian is next on the queue.
Yes, I like to think in terms of that which is strictly public and will be indexed by various entities about the DID, and that which is not strictly public. And the endpoint that matters to us is the thing that points to the authorization server related to that DID, because agency has these two components. One of them is the agency that's described in the DID, and the other one is the agency that has to now, you have to bring credentials in order to, you know, to get to private information. So my point is, I don't know whether this is going to be method specific or not, but I think the issue of an authorization server is a general issue that we might consider standardizing.
And go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think this is all, you know, worthy for discussion maybe after we get the next draft. So let's not hold up this draft on these kinds of questions.
Yeah, I was thinking that's a good transition to the BTCR, the DID conversation generally. Let's see, I think we have no one on the queue. If so, I will close out this topic, but with a reminder that we have a week to get feedback into the outstanding DID spec. So next on the agenda, we're going to talk about the DID hackathon, you know, sort of what we did, some of the findings. We're going to start with Veris 1 and then move into BTCR. Essentially, BTCR, we have a lot of open questions about it. Manny, do you want to talk to anything that you covered around Veris 1?
Sure. So this is based on the hackathon output, is that right?
Or
the,
yeah, last week. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So most of the hackathon, unfortunately, we didn't get as much time as we wanted to, you know, put in the hackathon. But the time that we did get, we looked at the DID spec and made sure that it works. There was a decent bit of work that Chris Weber also did when it came to linked data and object, the OCAP stuff, the object capability stuff. And we are currently in the process of updating the DID client to work with the new DID spec. So that work's ongoing, and I expect it's going to probably go on for the next couple of weeks. But the hackathon definitely helped to kick that work off. Nothing bad to report so far. Everything seems like it's going to work out, but we'll learn more as we kind of finalize our implementations. That's it for this one.
Great. And so to move on to BTCR, I think a lot of what we did was actually just regrouping and redoing the sample. And think. I'm very loud. 1 second. Okay. When I say sample, I mean the basically the generated DDO or whatever we're calling it now, the ID description object that gets generated from the combination of transactions. And some of the things in the document are implicit. So a combination of reworking the the samples into the format from the latest, VID hardening discussions. And, you know, we had a few questions there, but we also talked through the resolver process and had some questions about, some thoughts and questions about, responsibilities of resolvers at various layers. So I'm going, we have people on the queue. I was going to call on Christopher next, but let me start with Drummond, who's next on the queue.
Sorry, this was just very quickly because I'm going to have to jump off here before the end of the call. I just wanted to say that we're also, like everyone else, saying, okay, now that we're getting to a hardened DID spec, we're going to be doing a bunch of work on the sovereign DID method spec. As Manny was saying, authorization and, in our case, key management, of course, is a huge component of what a method spec potentially does, and that's a major piece of what we've been working on. So I expect it to, over the next month, mature a lot and come into rebooting with a pretty robust draft. And either that or Mike Lauder's name will be MUD. nothing like a little public pressure there. And we'll also be doing an update on DKMS at rebooting. So those two things are sort of moving forward together, and I just wanted to mention that, but back on to Christopher now.
Okay, so thank you, Drummond. I'll put the URL again. So this was the document that we were working on. So one of the things that we discovered was that we needed to kind of go back and look at, what actually is happening. What is the process? So I'm an app. I get a DID that I need to resolve. I send it to the resolver. The resolver then goes to the BTCR specific sub-resolver, and it has to do something to return back to the app. The DID document. And so we were trying to look at that process of, what happens there. And we ran into some interesting things. Some are BTCR specific, but some may be relevant for others. So, in our procedure, what happens is that the BTCR resolver basically first has to create what we're calling an implicit DID document solely from the Bitcoin blockchain data, which may not be everything. So we do that, and we're sort of, if people want to know some extra values there, we've created this sort of audit trail tag to store that. I'll show that in a little bit. One of the things that the BTCR method does is it then goes to the BTCR endpoint, which it learns from the op return, to get the first JSON type DID document. So what it's going to do is it's going to go there. There's a sub note here, which is that the ID, meaning the BTCR number, may not actually be in that DID document because it may be an immutable file named by a content hash. Thus, there's a catch-22 where we can't, some information we can't put in there. So, so we're in effect, the BTCR endpoint actually has to construct the ID when it's sending the final DID document to the back to the app. So next thing the BTCR resolver does is it authenticates this JSON LD fragment as valid. If it's immutable content like IPFS, it is implicitly signed by the blockchain transaction. There is no need to put a signature on the object because, in effect, it is signed by Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the public key. It has the hash. You know, we don't need to do it again. If the BTCR endpoint is something else, it has to have a signature matching the Bitcoin transaction signing key, which we're just calling key number one, which raises maybe an open question for other people. Is there some standard way to refer to a bottom first key and a DID in some fashion? Finally, the resolver merges and patches known JSON LD values, such as authorization bags and things of that nature, into the final DID document value. But we explicitly say you cannot overwrite the initial Bitcoin key value. It's additive only. That's sort of an open question with other people. Is that a good idea, bad idea, or whatever? If there are other JSON LD values in the type DID document that we don't know about, like somebody else's could be also referring to the same DID document from another, for instance, maybe Ethereum points to the same IPFS object as we do, and since IDs are constructed by the resolver and Ethereum could sign it, maybe they both point to the same DID document. If there are other unknown JSON LD values, we add them in there. Because of IPFS, we may need to patch in additional DID document material. Anything that's not in the DID set, we ignore by the resolver ignores, and then we return the final constructed JSON LD document. And so we actually have an example of kind of what it did. So we have a JSON structure in there, and one of the things we had was this sort of resolver specific envelope, which doesn't matter in the BTCR spec, but allows the resolver to basically give things like Satoshi audit trail or, be able to say what the resolver did in order to resolve this this DID document. And then we actually have the public key, which is key number one, which comes from the Bitcoin transaction. By default, the authentication is only that one key. We refer to the times to the service, which has a timestamp, et cetera. And we have the Satoshi audit trail as an extra thing that the resolver can offer. This ended up raising a bunch of questions. Why would an app need to know about update services? I mean, in effect, the DID resolver has to go through, if it's going through and sees an update thing and has to check to see if there's an update or another DDO is up there. It's basically going to do that and keep on doing that until it gets a proper current DDO. So why would an app ever need that? So that was one of the questions. If it is going through a bunch of old DDOs to get to the proper current DDO, you know, is this an audit trail? Which layer is this happening, et cetera? Our other big open question was the timestamp. So we have a bunch of things that are timestamped by the Bitcoin transaction. So we have a strong timestamp on some of the individual values, but not necessarily on the DID document as a whole, which may have been updated later as we constructed it. By the way, because it's constructed, there is no signature for the DID as a whole. We're relying on the resolver to have made sure that everything that's in there is properly signed, but because it is not the issuer of the DID, it can't sign the DID document as a whole. So we have some ideas of the document extensions and, you know, everything like verifiable claims that may also be in the CryptoKitties that may happen to reside in the BTCR endpoint. We're just ignoring those. We're just looking for the first DID document in that endpoint. That's the summary of kind of our thought process, and I'd love to get some feedback from others as to, you know, did we miss something? Did we do something totally wrong? And if people have thoughts on our open issues. That's it.
So Ryan Grant is next on the queue.
Yeah, so I put myself on the queue before Christopher got to the part about the update, but the question to the group is, for people who are familiar with the DID hardening spec and the current status of the update field, what is going on there?
Marcus is next, but Marcus, I noticed your question in IRC, and essentially we aren't using a resolver implementation. We're just talking through the steps of what we would expect a resolver to do and just raising questions there. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing your feedback on that. Marcus?
Thanks. Yeah, I have some feedback on what Christopher explained, but should I do that or do you want to answer Ryan's question first?
Either order you want.
Okay. I didn't have too much time during the hackathon last week, unfortunately. I did some earlier work also on BTCR method implementation, right? What Christopher is calling the sub-resolvers, we've been calling the drivers for the universal resolver that we did at DIF. And what you've been calling the envelope, I think, the resolver envelope, we've been calling that result metadata, or we've also been calling it supplementary information, extra stuff that could be useful for an app or a client. I would argue that the special BTCR service endpoint with the additional JSON-LD fragment, I think that would also be something that would go into this envelope. This would be metadata for the result rather than being a service endpoint in the DAD document itself, because it's method specific and it's not really an endpoint that one would use for interacting with the entity that the DAD identifies. So I think it's metadata that occurs during the resolution process and could go into the envelope rather than ending up in the final DID document. But But other than that, I think this link that you posted with the resolution steps, that's super helpful.
Excellent. And oh, you mentioned something. Did you cover the part that? Yeah, you answered both. I think one point before I move to the next person on the queue, Christopher Weber, I noticed flagged some questions in the scribing. Would you mind double-checking what he wrote and filling in? It's, you'll see what we've been calling question mark, we've been calling drivers, and yeah. Let's see. Who is next on the queue? Manu?
Yeah, just wanted to provide some thoughts to the markup. The first thing I think Christopher Allen pointed out, the BTCR endpoint, feels like you might be able to move that into a signature and audit trail in some way. Ryan asked, you know, what the status of the update. I think we had been calling this kind of the authorization stuff, the thing that tells you who's allowed to who's authorized to update the document. Based on the last rebooting of a trust, I think we had requests from the UPort and Evernim folks to not include any authorization information in there, meaning that, you know, different DID methods are going to have different authorization mechanisms and different update mechanisms. So those are DID method specific. So that would probably be specified by the BTCR method as in the spec. And then third thing. Go ahead.
Can I stop 1 second on there? I guess one of my open questions is, you know, there's the DID document that you give an app that asks you, you know, an app says, please resolve this DID, and then it gives you a DID document so you can get keys and other things to do what your app process is. Thus, should it ever give these authorization things? Because that's for something else. That's for determining whether or not the DID was authorized, and if it is or isn't. And I don't know. I feel like it's almost two different things here. So
I may be missing a nuance there. I probably am. So we may need to unpack that later on.
Okay.
Ryan, you're next on the queue.
Right. Mute. So Marcus. I think the idea of the BTCR endpoint is that it's not a required endpoint, but it's a thing that will probably be available because of the way the other patches that are used to construct a DID document in BTCR are accessed. So, for instance, if it means finding something through IPFS, we, as an endpoint, would say this is the URL you can go to in IPFS to collect some other maybe verifiable claims that a BTCR method resolver would be very good at parsing through, and perhaps other clients would be able to read, but it's not a required thing. Does that sound like a good use of a service now?
Yeah, sounds a little bit more like a service now after you described it. I think it's a little bit of both. You could argue it's a service endpoint in the DAD document, but you could also argue, I think, that it's metadata and should not be in the DAD document, but rather in the envelope. I'm undecided right now. I think it could be either way.
My understanding is that the purpose of a DID document, one of the three main purposes, is to return services. Am I getting that wrong?
Sure, you're right.
Christopher, you're next on the queue.
Uh,
Are you muted?
Okay, so what my thought here, I mean, the other way to approach this is, you know, we define a generic service, which is a, you know, it's a static JSON-LD service that just simply has a large bag of JSON-LD objects, and if one of those JSON-LD objects is a DID document, you know, other people should probably just ignore it. but we could basically define, you know, sort of a static endpoint, which simply points to a single file, which, you know, in fact, you know, or a single JSON object, the big giant bag, of which BTCR uses that to get its some of its DID document, but others can use it to go get a specific verifiable claim that somebody wanted to put in that bag. So that's another way to approach this, that the spec for that bag basically says, oh, by the way, some methods may store some method-specific things in here as well. That's my comment.
David Chadwick has the floor.
Thank you. This is not on the current topic. It's actually on a previous agenda item, which unfortunately I missed because I couldn't join the meeting till halfway through. There was an item on the agenda for me to review the current spec with respect to the life cycle model and say what I thought was missing. So I did send out an email on the 17th of January listing what I thought was missing from the current data model document. So basically, I just wanted a question answered from the group. What is the best thing to do with this email? Do you want me to put in loads of pull requests or not? The reason I didn't do that initially was because I didn't know whether people thought they were sensible to be addressed or not. So I was looking for a bit of feedback before I actually started to do pull requests. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Christopher, you're next. Christopher Allen?
Yeah, specific to David's thing, I think it's sort of up to you whether or not they're a pull request or an issue. I think a number of them to me felt like even you had some questions as to, you know, is it, you know, that it might, other people might have some questions about it, or even you have your own questions about it. You know, I would say each of those should be added as a separate issue. And, but if it's sort of like, yeah, that just makes sense, and I don't think anybody's going to complain about it, you can propose it as a specific PR request, and we can have the commentary on that PR request. At least that's my thinking about it. Manu, as the editor for the DID document, does that make sense for his list of things?
I'm sorry, Chris. Sorry, Christopher, I missed a lot of what you said, just because there's an enormous amount of hammering and sawing over here. Let me read,
sure.
And I'll respond in IRC.
Okay. Anyhow, back to the BTCR packathon observations. Are there any other methods that are having to construct the DDO, the DID document in any fashion? Like, you know, is UPort having to do that where, in fact, it exists in various pieces but then is constructed?
Please add yourself to the. Oh, there we go.
Oh yeah.
Go ahead.
We also have this the same type of issue where you have a document where in one of our methods, we actually have that the The DID is the IPFS hash of a specific document. So that document can then not be the final DID document, again, because it contains the DID, which would be the hash of the document. So it's the same thing that Christopher described. But I think we've also been, you know, thinking about doing the same thing where the DID method does not produce the signed DID document, but instead the output of the resolver is a DID document, and it's up to the resolver to make sure everything is cryptographically sound, if you will.
So we're actually at time. I'll get to Christopher in just a second. I think for the action items for next week, the main thing is make sure that you've reviewed the DID PR that's outstanding. I know we're still going to have a lot of questions about the results from the DID hackathon, so we'll find the right way to follow up. Let's see. And we have two people on the queue. Christopher.
Yeah, I sort of have an open question for Manu and for Dave, which is, so we have this JSON DID object, which some pieces are, time-stamped, and we can, provably time-stamped. Other pieces aren't. Some pieces, signed in one way. Some pieces are signed in another way. How do we do that in JSON-LD? I can't think of an example. I mean, the time signature spec when we did the time signature thing was for the object as a whole. So are most of the other signature things, but how do we basically say within things that, this value and this value were signed by the Ethereum blockchain, this value and this value and this value and this value were signed by this key, which we got from the blockchain, but isn't actually signed by the blockchain. This value and this value are inferred, they're implied from data that we've gotten from someplace else. I don't know, and how much of that we have to actually put in, how much of that does the application need? I mean, it feels like there's two needs. There's what does a resolver need to be able to do its business, or a driver, to use Marcus's terminology. What does a driver need? And then how much of that does it actually have to be delivered to the app? And I'm not sure that they're the same. So I don't need an answer now, but when you're just having some, you guys think about that, and I would appreciate.
Thanks. Marcus is next.
Wasn't so important, and I know we're out of time, so we kind of can skip that.
And lastly, Manu.
Just really quick, Christopher. So the short answer is we can do whole object signatures and do set signatures and chain signatures as long as it's the whole object. So you can mix and match different types of signatures, one from Ethereum, one from Bitcoin, one from RSA. We support that today. Doing the more specific, like cherry-picking signatures, that needs a new signature mechanism, and we've avoided doing that in the past because it really complicates implementations, and it creates potentials for security vulnerabilities where, developers assume that the entire object is signed or signed in a certain way and just use a JSON object when nothing, that attribute wasn't signed at all. So I'm very hesitant to creating that kind of signature scheme. We do that. So we've done that before for HTTP signatures. But again, it's kind of a landmine of a security landmine when you do that. Anyway, short thoughts on it. We can discuss more in depth later.
Yeah, we'll follow up on that. My first thought was that informally we can, either the audit trail or resolver metadata, but I agree that once it's in there, there's expectations about the scope that it applies to. So, yeah, we still have a lot to follow up on this. We're over time. So I'll follow up with the rest of the BTCR folks about, sort of what updates do we have from today specifically. And, sort of keep hammering on this document and figure out basically next steps, the combination. There are questions around resolver, our specific schema, things like that. So we'll try to break these apart. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks all. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay, bye.